right, Butch Vig, record producer. What do you think of that new Black Keys song right there?
I love that track. It's got a super cool new wave vibe to it. I mean,
Were you surprised to find out? It's the cheesy keyboard.
Yeah. I love it.
I know. I thought it was Fits in the Tantrums the first time I heard it until the singing came in. I was like, this has got to be a Fits song. But yeah, I mean, it's not what we were expecting from Black Keys, but it sounds great. Man, I'm so happy for that band. I'm sure, like me, but you've been a fan of theirs for a long time and are just, you'd love that we live in a world where a band like that can be as popular as they are.
Yeah, because they just do their own thing. You know, they've never really changed a whole lot. They really embrace the blues and put their own spin on it. And now the world has finally caught up to them. And I think when bands have that kind of career, it's an amazing testament to what they do.
It is. Well, it's great to see you again, Butch. It's been a minute since we've had you in here. Butch, of course, is the drummer for the band Garbage. He is also one of the most legendary record producers of the last 25 years or so. And you've been busy as you sat down. You told me besides keeping up with the family, it sounds like you got a bunch of projects you're juggling right now.
Well, I want to just give a shout-out to a show tonight. We've been working on a Smart Studios documentary. I don't know if probably some of you know, our studio closed a couple years ago. We just couldn't, you know, like a lot of studios, there just wasn't a need to keep it open, just wasn't getting used, and especially since I live out here. And when it closed, a friend of mine, a film director, Wendy Schneider, started filming these little testimonials of musicians who were sending their regrets and their stories. And yeah. After a couple of months, she said, I think I've got a movie here. And she's been working on it on and off for a couple of years. It's very, in the spirit of Smart Studios, very punk rock, do-it-yourself, very guerrilla style. But she's almost done with it. So she started a Kickstarter campaign.
That movie and the campaign, I really want to get into it because I am fascinated with the vibe that a building has and what makes it so special that people will come from all over the country to be in that room, to get that sound, to get that magic, whatever is going on in the air, because there are a few places that have that, and yours was one of them. And I'm really surprised to hear you say that it closed down. Is it because you didn't leave it with somebody to pick up where you left off? Is that what part of the problem was?
Well, I think it's just the business, the music business, the way things have been changing over the last 20 years. I mean, we had a small staff that was always working there. But, you know, they would offer really super dirt cheap rates for bands to come in. But when they can do it at home on their laptop,
right.
You know, you're not going to go in and spend even $100 a day when you can do it for free. So our studio, like a lot of studios, just can't really deal with that economic model. So we had to shut our doors.
That building was, and I think Billy Corgan says this in the movie, an S-hole, right?
It looked like a crack house from the outside. If you went down East Washington, I'm sure it had to be one of the ugliest buildings on the whole east side of the city.
What year did you start working at Smart Studios?
I think we opened the doors in 83 or 80, late 83, like it was December 83 or January 84, I think we did our first session there. So we had a good 30-year run there.
Wow. And who were the bands back in the early days, the first groups to record there?
Okay, one of the first bands was a punk rock band called Mecht Mensch. They had this song, I still remember the riff.
I want to be a zombie.
Hey, Robert Kirkman, are you listening? For the Walking Dead finale this weekend. Pick it up.
I had there was a band called Tar Babies. I think they were signed to SST, and some of those guys ended up in that band Tortoise. But we fell into this whole do-it-yourself punk rock scene. There was a Madison, like a lot of cities around the country, had its own scene, sort of insular in a way, not really knowing what's going on anywhere else. And we just went around to the local clubs and said, hey, man, you want to come and record? And we were constantly busy from that point on.
And was there something special about the acoustics in the room, or was it just your knowledge of record making that made those songs sound the way they did coming out of there?
Bean, I wish I could say I had knowledge of record making when I started out. I didn't really know what I was doing. I think part of what was great about it was I think everybody who recorded there felt this sort of sense of being left alone, and we have this sonic playground to do whatever we want. And most of the bands were on tiny indie labels, and there was never any input or guidance. You know, they just wanted, hey, if you give us a record, we'll put it out, man. So we experimented a lot. The studio was funky. You know, we didn't have necessarily state-of-the-art gear. So there was a sense of freedom, and I think sometimes by not really knowing what you're doing, you make mistakes, and those mistakes turn into really cool things.
Right. What was the first record, Butch, that surprised you at how well it sold? I mean, even if it wasn't a hit per se, something that got bigger than you expected to, that went beyond, you know, the Midwest.
Well, Killdozer's records were really the sort of sonic imprint, I think, that sort of put our studio, gave Smart Studios a name. That's why Billy Corgan called, and that's why Sub Pop and Kurt Cobain called. Killdozer is an acquired taste. It's dirgy, grungy, slow, funny, and weird and scary all at the same time. But they had a sound and a vibe, and that's why a lot of artists around the country started calling me up saying, man, this band Killdozer, we want to come and record your studio.
I thought that was so fascinating. Again, we're talking to Butch Vig here on the Kevin and Bean Show about the Smart Studios story. It's a documentary. You can go to Kickstarter.com to donate. We'll talk much more about the movie when we come back in a minute here. But I was so fascinated to see the link that I'd never thought of before between that sludge sound of Killdozer that kind of turned into the grunge sound of Nirvana. I mean, those two are directly related, and that was so interesting to me.
And that's one of the storylines in the film that Wendy, that sort of carries through the film. How did this sort of underground do-it-yourself punk rock scene sort of tap into the mainstream and sort of grow from a tiny little spark into working with bands like Smashing Pumpkins and Sonic Youth and Nirvana? And all of a sudden, those bands became embraced by the mainstream. So it's a pretty fascinating documentary.
It's kind of a shame, and I know the economics that you described make a lot of sense why a place like that has to go away, but it's kind of a shame. You feel like that's a piece of music history that should be preserved somehow. Maybe, I guess, that's what this documentary is about. If it can't physically still be standing, at least we'll have a record of what went on there, right?
Yeah, I mean, there's great music in there. And tonight we're Wendy's DJing at the Verdugo Bar in Eagle Rock, and she's playing from 7 to 10 p.m., classic Smart Studios tracks and really rare tracks. And she got in last night and we were looking at the playlist, and I think we did over 30 years, we did 1,000 bands there.
Oh,
easily. And most of them were like 3-day records. We track everything one day, overdub any extra overdubs and vocals in day two, and then mix it all on day three. So it was fast, you know. And
I just am fascinated that Wendy's going to play all 1,000 albums tonight. I mean, that's going to be a hell of a night.
Just put it on top speed and roll through it. If anybody's interested, there's no cover. Just come on down tonight. She's trying to raise awareness for the Smart Studios, the Kickstarter documentary. So,
and where is it again, and what time?
It's Verdugo Bar in Eagle Rock. I can't remember the exact address, but it's on Verdugo. And from 7 to 10 p.m., I'm going to be there, and I think Steve from Garbage is going to be there, and a bunch of other musician friends of mine are going to be there. So I think it's going to be cool. Come on down.
Fun. The Smart Studio Story. Go to Kickstarter.com for details. And I just tweeted out a link to the page with the documentary trailer and everything else. A lot of details about the movie. You got to check it out. We'll talk some more with Butch Vig when we return right after this on the Kevin and Bean Show on K-Rock. One of our favorite people in the music business, Mr. Butch Vig, in studio with us here on the Kevin and Bean Show on K-Rock from the band Garbage, record producer extraordinaire, and one of the voices in the Smart Studio Story. You can go to Kickstarter.com right now to chip in some money to get this film made. Butch's friend Wendy is making the movie, Wendy Schneider. Hey, is the thing already shot and the money is to get it pressed up and distributed? Is that what's going on here, Butch?
Yeah, Wendy's been filming this on and off for a couple of years. It's probably 90% in the can in terms of the footage. There's a couple miscellaneous interviews you want to get. But there's a lot to do with post-production, and we got to get all the licensing cleared with all this, because it's all pretty much all music all the way through the film.
Oh, yeah. So that would be expensive, yeah.
Yeah.
I've got a clip, and I think this is great, and this gives you a wonderful idea of what the movie is going to be like and why it's going to be so much fun to watch. They're talking about the history of this room in Madison, Wisconsin, where so many of these great records that we all love have been made. And in this clip, you'll hear a little bit of the band L7, Chris Walla from Death Cab, your friend Shirley, Dave Grohl, and Billy Corgan all talking about what Smart Studios was all about.
Tell me about your producer, Butch Vig, and what he brought to the band.
Oh, he's a masturbating animal.
I'm only happy when it rains.
The exact right drum sound, the exact
guitar,
right bass sound.
Bass guitar.
The exact right guitar sound.
We all knew about Butch Vig, but none of us knew who he was or where he came from.
We couldn't go to a single town, I think, in America where there wouldn't be somebody who leapt out of the woodwork who they'd worked with.
Butch was one of the first producers to come out of the underground that really wanted to turn your noisy garage band into something that the whole world would love, you know?
It's pretty fascinating when you think of Smart Studios, all the magic moments that happen in this basically a little hole.
An S-hole indeed. In Grohl's Sound City, he rescued some of that equipment, I guess, and it's in his house. What happened to the stuff that you used back in the day to make all those records, Butch?
Most of it has been sold. Steve and I kind of kept, obviously, the guitars and some of the amps and things and the good microphones. We had some good vintage microphones. But the centerpiece, we had an old vintage Trident A-Range mixing console, which actually came from Trident, all these great records like Bowie and T-Rex. And then it came to Cherokee over here in LA for a while. But I can't even tell you the number of great bands that worked on it. And we finally sold that. It was sitting in storage, and we sold the building, and I had to move it somewhere, and just the cost of moving it somewhere and keeping it sitting, just that was going to cost a lot of money annually, and I didn't really have a room out here to put it in. So I found a good – the guy who bought it, though, is a hardcore musician, engineer, and he'll take lovingly good care of it, which is cool.
That's nice. Did you make the first? Did you make all the garbage records there, or the first few, or what?
We made the first four up through Bleed Like Me, and then the last record, Night Kind of People, we made a little bit of it was done there, but most of it was done out here in L.A. Shirley and I live out in L.A. now.
Mm-hmm. What is you're working on a new garbage record now, right?
We are.
Because you have taken, between the last two, it seemed like there was a long, long break, so it won't be quite that long this time around.
Yeah, we've been having writing sessions on and off for the last 6 months, and we've got about 20 song ideas in the can. I'm hoping to finish The Foos by end of June, something like that, and then probably go back in the studio, and we'll try and get the garbage record done by Thanksgiving. We're shooting for it, and next year's going to be a big year for garbage. It's our our 20th anniversary.
Oh. How about that?
So there'll be a big tour, and a new album, and some other special things we're working on right now to sort of celebrate our anniversary.
Was there a time when you thought you would not be in a band? When you thought, hey, look at all this work I have and how much I love being a record producer. That's going to be where my career takes me.
You know, Bean, I think that even if I hadn't had success with Nirvana and the Pumpkins and Garbage, I'd still be doing this because I've kind of been playing music my whole life. I've been in bands since I was in junior high school, and it's in my blood, you know. It's sort of, I don't really know that I would be good at doing anything else anyway. So, and I'm lucky, I really am, that I've been able to, you know, sort of immerse my entire life in music. It's been great.
And since you mentioned the Foo Fighters, we keep seeing all these cryptic announcements about how they're doing something with this new album that's never been done before. What are they talking about?
I can't really say a whole lot about it. We've been recording now for a while, if you include pre-production. We've taken an approach that is quite different, and I don't know. I've never made a record like this. I don't know anybody who has, and it's we're not from a technological level. We're still going old school analog. We're dragging a 24-track Studer machine around. Some recording has been done in L.A. Some's been in some locations, but we sort of threw an X factor into the process, which is forcing all of us to be spontaneous, as well as really have to be in your A game. So it's been a challenge and fun. And
nobody's singing in English.
I'm more confused now than I was
before. Every song is in a different language.
Nobody is playing the instrument that they're good at.
No. They sound great. The songs sound epic. I mean, I think we're all really, really excited about how the album is sounding.
Recording caves.
Underwater. You're underwater, Butch.
You'll hear about it soon enough. We're kind of about halfway through the process of recording. And as I said, I hope to be done by the end of June, something like that. So we're hoping for a fall release of the album.
Very exciting.
But it sounds killer.
By the way, every time, and we've been lucky enough to have Dave and Taylor and all the guys in here, you know, throughout the years, every time we have them in, they always go, no, but after we finish this tour or after we finish this record, then we're really going to take a break. I'm serious. We're just really going to just back the F out and you won't hear from us. And then like 3 weeks later, they're like, oh, we got this thing we got to do. We can't wait. We're so excited. They refuse to stop working, the Foo Fighters.
Dave Grohl has this amazing energy to him. I mean, he's, I think one, he gets bored easy.
Yeah.
And he just loves, he's also, man, he's just crazy in love with music. And if the Foos are even, there's a tiniest bit of break, he's going to dive in and do something else. You know, he's always looking to play with other people. He hardly sleeps. Sometimes I'm like, dude, you got to just lay down and take a nap for a couple hours, will you? Because he's also a great dad. He's up the crack of dawn playing with his daughters, and then he just run around doing crazy stuff all day. And
he,
like me, he drinks a lot of coffee.
Yeah, I imagine.
There you go. All right, quick break, and then we'll come back with one more with our friend Butch Vig. Again, the Kickstarter is the Smart Studios story. We're trying to raise some money. The deadline, by the way, is this Sunday, so you got 3 days left to reach your goal. You're still a little short to try to get this movie, the Smart Studios story, made. And then the event tonight is going to be at the Verdugo, which you said is in Eagle Rock, right? And that's going to be Wendy, the director of the film, and she's going to be playing basically the history of Smart Studios tonight.
Yeah, at the Verdugo Bar in beautiful Eagle Rock.
Sounds great. More with Butch when we return right after this on the Kevin and Bean Show. Ladies, Chris Martin is single now. Come on, get on that. That's Coldplay on the world famous K-Rock, 106.7 KROQ. Man, is he going to have the time of his life now.
Hey,
he's going to be able to eat McDonald's again.
Hey, Gwyneth is single too, so you better give a shout out to the dudes out there, right?
Well, I don't know who wants to climb that mountain. That seems like a lot of work, Butch. I got to be honest. Our friend Butch Vig in studio with us here on the Kevin and Bean Show. Musician, of course, with the band Garbage. He was just talking about working on their new record. But producer extraordinaire. I mean, even in the last few years, doing AFI and Green Day and Soul Asylum, Jimmy Eat World, Against Me. You've just been so busy. But I wanted to ask about a couple of names that scrolled in the trailer for the Smart documentary that we're talking about. Because I didn't associate you with Depeche Mode. You worked with them?
I did a remix for one of their songs, In Your Room, and the band loved it and actually started playing that version in the set when they were on tour. That was when I got into doing remixes for Beck and Nine Inch Nails and House of Pain, and that was sort of the start of Garbage, because I would take their master tape and kind of mute everything or erase everything except the vocals and record all new music. And that's how I would approach a remix. And that,
how about that?
And that's how Garbage started. It just sort of doing the same, using that same approach.
Isn't that interesting? Now, when you do a remix with a band, do they just send you the parts and you put it together and send it back to them, or are you in a studio with them?
Yeah, typically they just send you the session or a reel of tape back in the day, and now it's on a thumb drive or something.
Right.
And then I just mess around with it and then, yeah, send it back. That's how a lot of remix guys do it. They just mess around at home or on their laptop and then send it back.
All right. The other name that jumped out at me in the list of credits on the documentary trailer was Marie Osmond. Now, was that put in there as a joke? is that for proofreaders? We're just supposed to catch that and have it removed?
Some history of Smart Studios. We had a board upstairs at Allen and Heath. Harrison 32, and then we bought a second one, and we soldered them together, so we had 64 inputs to mix on. One of them was originally owned by the Osmonds, and they had signed it inside the board. Now, cut to, after we'd had that board for about 4 or 5 years, we got a call one day. Marie Osmond's in Madison. She has a show at the Dane County Coliseum tonight, but she's working on an album. She needs to come in and do a quick vocal. So she came in. Spent maybe 15 minutes doing a background vocal, and the next to our door was a solid glass window.
Mm-hmm.
And she thought she was walking out in the hallway and walked right into the glass and broke her nose.
Oh,
no!
And had to go to the emergency room and cancel the show that night.
Oh.
You almost killed an American treasure, Butch.
So that's really the, I don't even remember the song that she sang on or whatever
that
it was
is,
on, but
that
that's what I
be...
remember is she broke her nose.
That has to be one of the most memorable sessions ever at Smart Studios. That's ridiculous.
Well, so much crazy stuff happened in the studio. I mean, we were on a really busy intersection, kind of like you guys are here. There's a lot of traffic.
I saw a picture. Yeah, I mean, they show it, and you see the cars driving by, and it's just sticking out there.
One day, we'd been in the studio till like 2 in the morning, and I had just fallen asleep, or I was in the middle of sleep about 6 a.m., and I got this call, Butch, a bulldozer or something just hit your studio.
Oh,
I'm like,
no.
What? And I jumped in my car and I rode down there. Sure enough, there's like ambulances and fire trucks. And it was this thing called a backhoe, this gigantic thing with a huge long arm that sticks out. And he had gone through, going 60 miles an hour, and the light changed and a car came through, and he had to swerve to avoid it. And he plowed right into the loading dock of Smart. And it went through two double walls of concrete into about 10 feet in the room and destroyed some amps and a drum kit and mics. Luckily, it was 6 a.m. Nobody was in there. Empty. You know, if it had been at night, it could have been a terrible accident. But luckily, nobody was hurt. But it was just freaky. I'm standing there. Whoa. A backhoe just went, drove into SMART.
Did the studio ever become a place where music fans would show up and wait and try to meet some of the stars that were recording there after it got to be well known?
Yeah, that happened not all the time, but frequently it would. And that's one of the reasons there was no sign on it. It didn't say anything. You would just walk up and go, there's just a tiny little buzzer to get in the building.
So that's why people thought it was a crack house.
Yeah. We didn't really want any advertising. But for the most part, at least people in Madison were really cool. They never really bugged us there. They knew we were just in there messing around.
Yeah.
Exactly. All right. Well, this has been so much fun, Butch. You really do have the best stories, and that's one of the reasons I'm excited about this documentary, because there are so many great stories involved in making rock and roll music. The Smart Studio Story is the name of the documentary. The Kickstarter campaign is up now. Please go there, watch the trailer. You'll want to donate. And one more time, Butch, where are you going to be tonight for the party?
I will be with Wendy and some ex-Smart Studios buddies and some musicians at Verdugo Bar in Eagle Rock from 7 to 10. Wendy's going to be DJing, and I think she's going to be showing the trailer for the Smart Studios story, and she'll have some literature and stuff. So if anybody's interested, go to smartstudiosdocumentary.com. It's on Kickstarter, and check it out, man.
Yeah, sounds like fun. Well, listen, let's hope we see you later in the year with some new garbage, and thanks so much for coming in. We appreciate it.
Right on. Thank you.
Ralph Garman.
Yeah.
Did a story yesterday about Amber Heard, mm-hmm. talking about her immense beauty,
yes.
and how she's not responsible for it. It's just the way she was born. Can't do anything about it.
Yeah, I like her sort of matter-of-fact detachment from the fact that she is smoking hot. She takes no great pleasure or pride in it. She simply says, that was the genetic hand I was dealt. You can't really, you know, I'm not responsible for it, so I can't be particularly proud of it. It is what it is, and I try to live a full life of keeping myself involved in other things. I don't focus on it so much.
However, what she doesn't say is, looking like me gets you engaged to Johnny Depp. She doesn't say that, though.
Yes, she's a beautiful girl who's a very talented actress who lives in a rarefied atmosphere, admittedly.
And that got us into a conversation about what life must be like for those that are so genetically blessed. And you were suggesting, and I thought this was interesting, we thought we'd explore it a little bit more today, that maybe there are some downsides to being always the prettiest person in the room that we don't really think about.
I don't think there's maybe about it. I think if there's absolutely a tremendous downside. Obviously, we all recognize the upsides, because most of us aren't particularly specially attractive.
Most people are average.
And so, right. So we look at those people who are beautiful and we say, oh, my God, that is what I would die to be. That's what I aspire to be. They must have the world by the ass because of their looks. And I think, yes, obviously there are some advantages. They say, more attractive people do better in job interviews, let's say, than ugly people do or average people do. You can manipulate, I suppose, that situation to your benefit if you're that kind of person. But my point of view is that there must be a tremendous downside, especially being a beautiful woman in this society, from the standpoint of the tremendous nonstop barrage of unwanted, unsolicited attention and come-ons, and it just must be exhausting to deal with that for your entire life. I mean, think about someone who says, I became rich later in life, and now I don't know who I can trust anymore, because I don't know whether people just like me for me or like me for my money. At least that person had a semblance of a life before that moment where they did know what people's intentions were and what their motivations were. Or someone says, I'm famous now and I don't have the same kind of connection I do with my friends because people like me, because they want to be around me because I'm famous. If you're a beautiful person, you've been attractive your whole life, you've never known anything else other than people who want something from you sexually or for attention-wise or something. It must be, I think, a tremendously grueling existence.
Now, I would have guessed yesterday when you were talking about this, it would be 80% positive, 20% negative. You guessed 50-50.
I did, yeah. Because I think there are sporadic moments throughout your life where that attractiveness comes in handy and you can use it to your advantage. But I think the day-to-day, the in and out, walking down the street, going to the supermarket, going to the car wash, that is when they have this constant barrage of unwanted, unsolicited attention.
And probably
which I think for a beautiful woman must get really sort of disheartening.
And probably from the wrong people.
That's the thing. You know what dicks certain guys can be.
That probably
bean.
Is key.
And how creepy some bean people can be. Imagine, Gary, imagine every cat call from every construction worker and every guy at a bar, like, "Hey, pretty lady, why don't I get you a martini? I'm not drinking tonight. Yeah, but how'd you like to drink what's in my pants?" I mean, that guy, you got to deal with him every time you go out.
By the way,
Bean.
Just for the record, when I am out and run across attractive women in day-to-day at the gas station, sure, or the supermarket, that's or the dentist or whatever, I don't talk to any of them.
Right?
I'm one of those people who is too intimidated to talk to girls that are too pretty.
Oh, that's not true.
I wish I'm not. I am not going to fight above my weight class. I'm just not.
Wish that was the case here on the radio show.
Well, we have a little bit of a buffer.
Should be on every day, Candace.
We have a little buffer here. All right.
You have a very little buffer, from what I've heard.
What we're looking for,
and used a little buffer,
1-800-520-1067 is, and I know this sounds like something that Kevin and Bean would come up with just to talk to really, really beautiful women, but we're seriously interested in this topic.
Bean would do that. Bean would do that.
What are the downsides?
Did this happen yesterday, Ralph? Did this happen? Did, in response to your story, did Bean go, "We should talk to hot women"?
Yes.
"We should talk to hot chicks"?
Yes, he did.
Because I think it's worth investigating further. I think Ralph brings up an excellent question that I think many people listening have not thought about. I think you're right, Ralph. I think most people look at the super attractive and go, they got it made. It's like they're just floating on air through life. And they don't realize that every time they get out of their car and walk into Target, it's a minefield for them because they have people looking at them and talking to them and staring at
them.
You want to talk to Maria real quick before the break, and then we'll come back and take some more calls at 1-800-520-1067. Hi, Maria. Thank you so much for listening and calling. What's going on?
Hey, so, my name is Maria. I am smokingly hot. Hit the genetic lottery.
Okay.
And got brains, too. I have not gotten jobs twice in my life because I was told it takes more than a pretty face to work here.
What?
I'm a computer programmer.
But wait a minute.
So they thought you couldn't possibly have beauty and brains, so they just assumed you only were pretty, therefore weren't qualified for the work.
Absolutely.
But couldn't you convince them that you knew it?
Well, I mean, it's a job interview. California's a right to work. They can not hire you for any reason, right? So those are the comments that I got.
And I do imagine.
Believe me.
I'm sorry. I do imagine for beautiful women, what you choose to do makes a big difference. Like if you want to be an actress or you want to be a model, it's a pretty big boost. But if you're into the sciences or other kinds of things or being a teacher sometimes, that could be a big problem.
I definitely think it could be. But now I've got a great job and definitely relied more on my brains. But, being hot does get you further in the career.
Would you say, what's
the
percentages?
Yeah, you wouldn't give it up, right,
Maria?
Would
you say 50-50?
I would definitely say not 50-50 in my profession. You need to actually have some intelligence to get ahead.
Right.
You can't do the job.
But in terms of just your life experience, in terms of your quality of life, would you say being very attractive is the upside is much bigger than the downside, or would you say it's probably about even?
No, the upside is much, much better than the downside.
Yeah. There you go.
Fantastic. And I bet there are some work environments, by the way, where they feel like a woman who is too pretty would be a ridiculous distraction to everybody else at work. Do you remember the supermodel that we had answering the phones at K-Rock a few years ago? How many times a day did Ralph walk by her desk during the show? I mean, it was insane how pretty she was.
Yeah.
It was nicely distracting.
Who's talking about?
Janelle?
Yeah, she would put lotion on.
She did that video for us.
She was very pretty.
Yeah. Were she ate bananas? Yep.
All right, Maria, thank you so much for listening. Thank you so much
for
calling.
We didn't exploit that.
No.
Hot girls, we have problems too. We're just like you, except we're hot.
Right? Yeah, that's true.
I would like to say, by the way, for all the heat we take on this show, that we are standing up for the downtrodden. We have found a group of people who need our help, and we are giving a voice to the voiceless. That's what we're doing here today.
USA!
Right?
USA! USA!
Thank you, Beer Mug. We're talking about, Ralph, you just joined us back in studio. Tell folks who just tuned in why we have the most attractive Kevin and Bean listeners in the world on the phone right now.
I just think there's a tremendous downside to being exceptionally beautiful. I think often, as Maria, our first caller, mentioned, your brains are suspect. Your intelligence is suspect because you're very attractive. People don't assume you can have both. I think what primarily I think would be difficult for women is the tremendous amount of unwarranted attention and being hit on all the time and inappropriate comments and stares and stuff, I would think that would really start to grate.
I wonder if they would also get negative reaction from women, from girls.
Jealousy.
Yeah, whatever.
Issues. Yeah, I'm sure.
Well, and then, we didn't even bring this up, but I also feel as women who are primarily identified for their looks start to age, I think they must feel a tremendous amount of pressure to try to maintain whatever that was, because that was the largest part of their the identity given to them by society for a small time.
But they should move away, right?
What?
They should just move away.
When they get older and less attractive, they should just move away?
See, yeah,
that's what
there
I'm
you
talking
go,
about.
Right there.
That right there is what I'm talking
Let's
about.
Let's talk to Leslie real quick. She's in the demographic you're talking about here. She's on line four, and she calls us from Huntington Beach, where, by the way, a lot of competition for the hottest chick in Huntington Beach. I'll tell you that. Hi, Leslie. Thanks so much for calling.
Hey, how are you?
Good, thank you.
What's going on?
Good. You know, it's true. It does bring on a lot of unwanted attention, and unfortunately, it tends to not be from the demographic that you want.
Yeah.
In a couple of years, I've been single. I don't get asked out by the guys that I would like to go out with. I get asked out by homeless men.
Right. Hey, and you don't know till you give them a chance.
And you think that maybe those the quality guys are intimidated by you because you're so pretty, probably, right?
That's my guess. That's my guess.
And we've
then,
heard that
and
a lot.
Then when you reject the homeless man or the one you wouldn't necessarily be interested in going out
Bean,
with.
Bean.
I'm sorry. Say that again. When you reject them, what happens?
I get called a bitch.
No.
Wow. Well, are you bitchy when you turn them down?
No, I'm actually out of my way to be really nice to everybody.
In fairness, Leslie, any woman, no matter what she looks like, if she turns us down, we think she's a bitch. So it's not just beautiful.
Because that way it's not us.
Yeah.
That way it's not a bad reflection on us.
That's right.
Right.
We are sorry for your burden. Thank you so much for the call. You always have a place that you can come to in the Kevin and Bean Show. Let's go to Lauren. She's on line three. She's from Marina Del Rey, and she has a plan.
Hey, Lauren.
Hi.
Hi there.
Too hot.
Well, I wouldn't say that. I'm 5'9", and I have long blonde hair. And when I go to the grocery store, when I go to the gas station, my life has completely changed. Like, my posture, I don't stand up straight anymore. You know, it affects the clothes I pick, so I don't attract the wrong attention. And I'm also working towards, you know, a corporate job, and it kind of affects how I present myself in that environment.
I imagine you do. You try to dress down. Oh, you can't.
Stop it.
This is such
it's
a sword.
It's very set. No, it's very set.
Why have this conversation with these douchebags? That's the problem.
I'm saying I feel for Lauren. She has to dress down when she's running errands because she's too sexy, you guys. It's tough.
By the way, she's disguising her true self just to go out and not be bothered so much. I think that's horrible.
I agree.
No, you don't.
Stop playing the music then.
Lauren, thank you so much for the call. We appreciate you listening. Look,
there in are essence, some... think about it. Extreme beauty is sort of a birth defect.
I would rather have that birth defect than mine, though.
But sure.
Wouldn't you?
It's a good birth defect, but it is a freak of nature, right?
Yeah.
So if you are changing the way you dress and your posture and you're almost sort of hiding yourself,
you have to ugly yourself up.
People, that's a horrible world to live your life in. Most of us just put on our clothes and we go about our business. We never appreciate the fact that we can be largely anonymous and just go about our lives.
Ralph,
I agree.
I don't agree completely because... I know lots of women, myself included, who will wear big, like, sweatshirts to the grocery stores to not be bothered. And I'm not at all stunning in any way. And yet men still follow you and track you around.
Oh, we can tell.
I mean, a lot of women who aren't stunning do that. You'd be surprised.
So it's just men or dick.
Yeah.
Is that what you're saying?
Yes, that's what I'm saying.
We're the problem. It's not women's beauty. It's men.
Well. Let's go to Tara. She's in Northridge. She's on line six, by the way. Somebody brought up what it's like, how it affects the interaction with your female friends, and that's what Tara's calling us about.
Hi, Tara.
Hi, guys.
Hi there.
Hi, May. I was calling because, you know, my whole life I've really had a hard time keeping girlfriends, and my best friend since I've known since I was 9, she has a problem, like, with me hugging her husband. So much so that her husband came up to me and was like, yeah, she doesn't really like me hugging you.
Wow.
We're still best friends. But
that's weird. Have you ever had that conversation with her?
No. I don't want to, like, you know, I don't. If she feels jealous enough to tell her husband about it and he felt like he had to tell me, I feel like I don't want to
Isn't that interesting? Yeah, it's completely innocent, and if you were an average-looking friend, she wouldn't have any problem with it at all.
Well, and the thing is she hugs my husband. So, you know, it's just kind of weird.
But like, she's a beast, though, right, Sarah? You're not threatened by her because she's a beast.
Oh, yeah, I'm not threatened by her, but, you know, I just feel like I don't think it should be like that.
Yeah.
But I've had this problem my whole life with women, like, all my girlfriends will go out and they won't invite me to the club. And I'm like, hey, well, you know, what's going on? And it's like, I kind of feel like they just don't want me to be the hottest girl there. You know?
They don't.
Want the competition.
Yeah. They don't. And
yeah, I mean, when a guy comes up to the table, he's going to try for you because you're the best looking one at the table. That makes a lot of sense. Thank you, Tara. Appreciate that.
Okay, so the problem isn't men, really. It's women. Women are the problem. Now
we're confused. Yeah.
Guys, let's talk to a high school English teacher, Leslie, on line 3. We have often talked about how crazy tough it must be to be attractive, you know, 25-year-old when you're teaching high school kids. Like, it must be a nightmare, right?
Leslie?
Oh, it's totally a nightmare.
High school teacher.
Oh, yes. It's very strange. When I first started, I was incredibly young. I was only 23 when I started.
Mm-hmm.
And it was so funny because, you know, I would dress appropriately, but I've been told I have a sex pot body.
Yeah.
Which is kind of an issue. Genetics blessed me with a large chest, a very narrow waist,
right.
Lovely hips, and a booty you could grab onto. And unfortunately, that becomes a huge issue when you're around pubescent boys all day.
Yeah.
I can imagine, especially high school. What the?
Or elderly men. Or middle-aged men, or men in their 20s, or
men in general.
Yeah.
They have a second brain that they just can't control, apparently.
You're right.
Yep, we're
guys,
back to men.
It's men's
it's
fault.
Men.
It's men.
Do you guys feel
that
we're not going to be able to solve this problem in phone conversations with our listeners, that it may be time to have a get-together where we can really just get together with these listeners and just hash it out?
Leslie, I'm sorry.
I'm saying we're willing to work overtime and show up at night somewhere to get together with all of our listeners who have this problem, like a support group. We could lead a support group for the hottest chicks in Southern California.
I think it's a great idea. I think Bean should lead a support group of all these beautiful women. All the women should bring aluminum softball bats with them. And then we'll take Bean out in the parking lot and we'll have a little blanket party. And we'll teach them what it's like to be beautiful.
Oh, yes. Only if we're allowed to dress the way we'd like to dress and not how we have to dress.
Good
when
enough.
We come to work.
I like
done.
It.
Done. No rules at our meetings. Thank you, Leslie. We appreciate the call. Win your way into the K-Rock Weenie Roast 2014. We got tickets for you this morning on the Kevin and Bean Show, and we'll talk to actresses Rita Volk and Katie Stevens. They are Amy and Karma from MTV's Faking It. They're fake lesbians, don't you know? Very funny show. That's all coming up here on K-Rock. Hey, I was out on Friday, and for folks who, like me, weren't listening, you guys talked to Lisa May about her new BS cloud-based diet, right?
Yes, she's allowed based on clouds.
She's allowed to eat clouds. Lisa, tell Bean the fake disease your fake doctor gave you.
Hashimoto's.
Wait, first, before we move on,
Hashimoto's.
She went to a regular doctor, an actual scientific doctor.
A scientific doctor,
right.
Yes.
And a Western doctor.
A Western doctor, right. And he couldn't find anything wrong with her. So then,
because there's nothing wrong with her, right.
So then I went to a naturopath who did more complicated blood work, much more
found different things to charge you for. Got it.
Right. And I came back with Hashimoto's, which is where your immune system attacks your thyroid.
Sure. That's happening.
And so.
No, that's totally happening because look at Lisa. She weighs 1,000 pounds. Oh, wait. She's in the best shape of her life.
And so one of the ways that you can treat this is by pulling out all of the foods that potentially are causing inflammation.
So, Bean, I'm going to just sort of read down this list of things she's not allowed. Then we're going to talk to her doctor. So
maybe
we can get some clarification.
Great.
She's not allowed any kind of nut, seed, bean, grains, alternative sweeteners, fried foods, dairy products, all processed foods, alcohol, chocolate, eggs, and vegetable oil and culinary herbs.
Nightshades and gluten.
Sorry, I didn't have the whole list.
Well, those are important ones.
All of that stuff has been taken away from Lisa in this BS diet.
And by the way, nightshades, Lisa,
yes.
A term I wasn't familiar with, is everything. It's tomatoes and it's peppers.
It's peppers.
And it's
white potatoes. Yeah.
That's. I mean,
eggplant.
It's diet staples is what it is.
She literally just swallows air.
Lisa,
it's
were
yummy.
You not, were you not
yummy.
Feeling well? Is that why you went? Because, again,
yeah,
I look at you and I go, there's someone who's in, in great shape and is healthy.
I've really, really, over the last 5 years, cleaned up my diet incredibly. Like, it's just so different than what it, you know how I used to put sweet and low in my wine.
Yeah, I mean,
and my coffee tasted like a Hershey bar. I mean, it was just unbelievable.
Those are the good old days.
There was no such thing as too sweet for me.
Right, but my question is then, why are you going this ridiculous extra step?
Well, because I have cleaned it up so much, and yet I don't feel like I feel that different. And I still get really, really tired at the end of the day, even before the end of the day, around 3 o'clock.
Let's see if we can figure out why Lisa May, who does a morning radio show, might be
gets
tired.
Gets up at 3 in the morning.
That's weird.
Well, it doesn't help, that's for sure. I could feel better.
We have her doctor on the line, Dr. Aristotle Freedom. Hello, doctor.
Hi, doctor.
Hello, everyone. How are you?
Great to talk to you, Dr. Freedom.
Great to talk to
you. I'm feeling good, too, by the way.
And, you know, I always say, every time we have a session together, Lisa May, Lisa will.
Sure. I repeat that in my head.
Oh, you
right. It helps,
that's
yeah.
Right, yeah.
Now, you are not, just for my information, doctor, you are not a medical doctor. You're not one of those fancy doctors who went to medical school and learned things, right?
I'm sort of a medical doctor.
Oh, well, you are. You're sort of.
Yeah.
Did you graduate from medical school?
I'm not all hung up on completion, man, okay?
Right.
So how do you describe what you do, Dr. Freedom?
I'm a natural path.
A natural path.
Okay. Right. And, you know, it's not a coincidence, man. I will show you the path of nature towards feeling better and changing your life forever, man.
Okay. So basically step one was to tell Lisa she can't eat anything, right?
Listen, with the world we live in, man, all these processed foods and everything, I mean, they just tear you up inside. You end up with what I like to call leaky gut.
It's true. Leaky
again,
gut
a
is a
term.
Big problem.
That is a big problem, man, because once your guts start leaking, you know what the next thing is?
I'm afraid to ask, but what?
Bunghole rain.
Oh, no.
I do not want that.
No,
you don't want bunghole rain.
It's like having a house, man, okay? And then a big thunderstorm comes, and if your roof starts leaking, the next thing you know, your basement's full of crap, man.
Well, I guess that's
it. Wouldn't you go on this diet to prevent that?
Yeah, you don't want a crappy basement.
So exactly. is this what we used to read about the paleo diet? I mean, you basically just having Lisa eat what the cavemen ate, right?
Yeah, I tell her just to forage, man.
Forage?
Yeah. Just go out there, just whatever you can find on the ground, man. Eat that. Because that's more, you know, holistic. And one thing it does, it sure patches up that leaky gut.
Does anybody in the medical community, have they ever gone over your plan? Do they agree with your plan? Do you get some support?
Man, you're sure hung up on peer pressure.
Well, I'm just asking. I'm just asking if, because we asked Lisa, did she, after she talked to you, go back to a real doctor? And she said, no, why would I do that?
Hey, dude, if everyone's standing in the room in the dark and I have a candle, do I have to make sure everyone else likes my candle?
That's what I think.
Yeah.
I don't know.
That's what I think, too. Oh, hold on.
What is that?
Wow. What? Ow.
What's happening? Stop that.
That's my Tibetan bell, man.
Well, don't do that. That's painful.
It clears up all the negative energy that's coming from you, too.
It's rough, right?
It is
it's
rough.
Hard to be here
no wonder
these
you're,
people.
You're tired all the time, Lisa May. It's put up with these two
this
chuckleheads.
Negative energy.
No, it's exhausting. I'm having one conversation with them, and I'm all just shattered.
Your chakras are probably
my
wrecked.
My chakras are all up in my hoochie.
All right.
None of
those
works?
None of those are things.
Wait, you have a hoochie?
Of course, we all do, man.
Okay.
We all come from woman, so we're all part woman, and so everyone's got a hidden hoochie.
How long?
That's unlikely.
I think that's a band.
Hidden hoochie? They're playing right after bunghole rain. How long does she have to stay on this diet before she goes back to regular food? Dr. Freedom?
Hold on, man.
All right. What's up? You okay?
Doctor?
Dr. Freedom.
Yeah. I'm just happy, man.
You are. You're very happy.
You're very happy.
You know why? Because I don't eat any gluten. I don't eat any nightshades. I don't eat any window shades.
Right.
I don't eat any sunglasses, anything involving shade. I'm all about light. I hate light bulbs, flames, matches.
Wow.
I started that diet.
That seems all bad.
It's all about light, man.
is all about light.
Flashlights.
Right.
You know, small appliance bulbs, just anything that has light. I mean, just keep your diet light. You ever hear about, oh, I'm kind of full. I'm going to eat a light lunch.
Right. That means smaller portion.
Whoa.
Still thinking about that Avicii show Saturday night, headlining the K-Rock Weenie Roast. He was tremendous, wasn't he?
I thought so, too.
And you never know what's going to come next. I mean, you know, one minute he's playing, Wake Me Up or something. We've heard a million times of K-Rock. The next minute he's playing a sped up Who record. You know? Yeah. I mean, it's like anything is part of the mix. He's just so good at putting it all together and making it a show. You know?
Can I tell you a quick backstory before?
Sure.
Before we go into our phone topic?
He was phenomenal, wasn't he?
He really was. But it was funny to be in the crowd and watch people's reaction to him, because people that were not familiar with him that are younger were like, what the F is going on? And he does not shy away from that. But I wanted to tell this quick story because they put up a photo of me talking to Beck. Uh-huh. And Bean, we had gone out. You, of course, were asleep for 4 hours by that
point. How dare you?
We went out and we introduced Beck. Hey, everybody. Thanks for coming.
I saw it. I was watching.
Okay, so here's Beck. So then we walk off stage, and Beck is standing there, and he says, hey. And I said, hey, Beck. And he said, we haven't done this in a long time. And I said, yeah, I know. And he said, it's been at least 20 years. And I said, yeah. And he said, the last time, if I recall correctly, it was Ed McMahon was there.
Uh-huh.
And I said, yes. And he was meeting... Who was it? Being the leader of Black
Henry
Black.
Rollins.
Henry Rollins. I said, yeah, Henry Rollins was there. And he's like, yeah, that was so weird because I remember when they met.
Now, wait, hold on. You're having this conversation like on the side of the stage after you've already introduced Beck and the audience is waiting for Beck to walk out?
Yes.
And he's hurry whatsoever to like get out there and start doing the show?
So that thought came to my mind and I was like, you know, it's great catching up and all, but maybe you should go out on stage because everybody's waiting for you. And he's like, oh, okay. And he walked out on stage. It was so bizarre.
It was, and then, of course, he brought up.
I forgot one more thing. One more thing was I said, when I first interviewed you, it was my first solo interview, and I had no idea what you were talking about. None whatsoever. And he said, that's funny because it would have been 1992, and I would have just been making crap up.
Right. Really?
Yeah.
Oh, totally. Now you feel better?
Yeah. All this time, I thought I was a disaster. I am, but not because of that.
I kept thinking as I was watching him, and he was so great. And he brought up the 94 Weenie Roast played at also, but from the stage. And I kept thinking, remember how young and scared he was back then? Remember just how out of place he was? I mean, he did not want to be performing in front of huge crowds back then. That was not what his thing was about at all.
I guess not, but man, he's got balls.
He has just turned into such the consummate entertainer, though. I mean, he's just so great on stage. And he did a little Billie Jean, which was fun.
That was weird and fun.
No, it was a lot of fun, and you could see photos and interviews and all sorts of backstage stuff and write-ups and everything of the K-Rock Weenie Roast at K-Rock.com, and you should, because it was a really, really, really special day. All right, new topic. Kevin, what made you bring this up last week when you came in?
I have friends, and they're a couple, and one of them was moving into the other one's apartment.
Okay.
And so they said, this is your closet, and they were cleaning it out and stuff, and there was a box in there, and... So the question came up, what's this? And the answer was...
Wait, did someone say, what's in the box? No.
Well, sort of, yeah, sort of. Like, what is this? The other one said, oh, that's my dead pet. That's my dead dog.
Okay.
Okay, so to me, that's weird.
Ashes. Weird that they had the dog's ashes, or weird that it was in the closet?
Just that it was in the closet. It was 7 or 8 years later. You know what I mean? Like...
Well, you don't just throw it out.
Yes,
I mean,
you do.
Well, I mean, if you...
I love pets. I have dogs. I've always had dogs. When they die, I don't keep the ashes. So I came in the next day and I said to Bean, listen to this. This is crazy. And they still had... And the dog was... And Bean said, yeah, I have the ashes of a lot of my pets.
I think a lot of people, I don't know what the percentage, I'd love to know from a vet what percentage of people who lose a pet at the vet decide to cremate it and have a memento, and what percent just say you go ahead and dispose of the body. But I wouldn't be surprised if it's at least 50-50. Would you, Lisa?
I was shocked. So clearly I didn't think
it
was 50-50.
No, I do know a lot of people that do that, but then, I don't know, wouldn't you assume they'd bury the ashes or do something
with
them?
Well, that's what I would generally think.
Is there...
Like, I don't know that you just put it in your closet.
I've never.
You never have?
No, I haven't. Because I would need a end plan for those.
And yeah, there's no end plan. There's just keep it in the closet.
Yeah.
That's weird.
Well, I don't think we've ever discussed this, but it'd be interesting to hear from our listeners what their take on this is, if they think it's weird to get ashes of your pets. And if you're a person who has ashes for your pets, what do you do with them? Do you put them on a mantle or over the fireplace if you have one, or do you put it on a bookshelf, or do you like Kevin's friend and just stuff in the closet somewhere and never think about it?
So yeah, bizarre. I didn't think getting them was so weird, but I just wouldn't know what to do with them then.
But I don't know that I've ever heard of anyone taking a pet's ashes and spreading it in the Columbia River or something like you would do, or in the ocean, or whatever, like you would do with a human. I don't think I've ever heard of anyone doing that with a pet's ashes.
I bet people do.
I don't know.
I'm sure they do. I'm sure they do.
Yeah.
Yeah, like if your dog loved the beach or whatever, you'd think you'd do something with the, if you're going to keep the ashes, do you keep them in a box in a closet? Just an unmarked box.
I only do that with people.
An unmarked box. That's just weird, right?
I think what happened in that situation is probably that when the pet died, it was a number of years ago, when the pet died, they probably put it in a place where they could see it. And it, kind of eased them into the loss, into the period of not having that dog. And then as more and more time went on and they got over it a little bit more, they didn't feel the need to have it displayed quite so prominently. So they just put it, they weren't going to throw it away. So they just put it someplace kind of out of the way, but they still had their pet nearby, is my guess.
In a closet.
I've got Chin Ho, and I've got Santa's Little Helper, and I've got Atomic.
Those are beans.
And I've got Yum Yum. All of those are dogs. I've got all dogs. I've got four dogs at ashes.
So yeah. You keep all four of them.
I do.
All right, you're a nut loaf.
they're on a bookshelf. It's nice to have them. It's nice to always remember. And I also have them. I also have their collars around each urn. The collars that they wore when they were alive.
What an effing bummer your house would be. what a bummer. That's one of our four. Here's another one.
I have pictures. I have, painted portraits.
Okay. Oh, wow.
Well, you gave me a gift certificate for one of them.
Yeah, because you're a crazy cat
and
lady.
And I loved it so much.
All right.
I have an oil painting of one of my dead cows.
All right. I'm surrounded by crazy people. All right. When I'm not the crazy person, there's something wrong.
Let's go to Cindy. She is on line six. She might be able to answer our question about how common it is for people to request pet ashes.
Hey, Cindy.
Hi.
Do you have your pets?
I do have my pets, yes.
Mm-hmm. All of them?
Okay.
Probably not all of them, no.
Were they cats?
No.
Okay.
I have one cat. I have lots of dogs. But I work at a Warner Center Pet Clinic in Woodland Hills.
Okay.
Oh, okay.
Yes. So I would say probably 70% of the people
get
really? Their dog ashes returned. Yes.
70%?
But, I mean, it's a, wealthy area, to say the least. So
What's it cost to get a dog cremated and given back to you in a box?
If it's a Labrador, probably $200.
Wow, that is a lot. Wow. That is. And do you have any idea what most people do with the ashes? Are they on display, or do they throw them into the wind somewhere, have a ceremony, or bury them, or something like that?
You get a choice. Personally, we sprinkled some of ours at the lake where we used to go camping and stuff like that. But they have, rocks you can put in the garden that have a little name tag. They have different boxes. They have photo frames with the box. They have multiple ideas of
ways. How about just a box with no wording on it in a closet?
A box with no wording in it. Well, you don't pay any extra for that box usually.
Okay.
Huh.
So it's an industry, right?
Definitely.
Okay. Thanks so much for listening and thanks for calling.
You can also get your dog made into a diamond too, but that's much more expensive.
Made into a diamond.
I don't know what that means.
All right, good.
Can I get my dog to come back to life? How much do I have to pay to have that happen, to not have my dog die?
Well, they have tried the cloning stuff. I haven't seen anyone successfully do that.
Well, let us know if they do.
Okay, no problem.
Okay, thank you, Cindy.
Thank you for the call, Cindy. All right, well, all the
70%!
I'm not surprised by that.
I
thought it would at least be 50-50, but
I didn't know all of you were crazy.
People like having their pets nearby.
Right, but that's not your pet.
Well, they like the memory of their pet. Look, Kevin, especially, and let's remember, you're making that decision within an hour of when your pet dies, when it hurts the most.
Right.
That's when you're likely to say, I'm not ready to say goodbye to Fluffy.
Right. I had a dog that died, and I was heartbroken. Never occurred to me to ask for the ashes. It really took me a long time to get over.
Yeah.
But the ashes aren't the dog.
Right. I understand.
So, I'm not crazy.
But you hate Jesus then, or something, or America, or somebody.
I'm not positive that's what it means.
All right, the phones are filled. We'll see what you have to say. A lot of our listeners have creative things that they're doing with their ashes. And by the way, Ralph hasn't even come in and yelled at me and Lisa yet. So there's a lot still to come here on K-Rock. Monday, of course, means dead pet talk on the Kevin and Bean Show, like it does every week. We just had a listener on who works at a veterinarian's office in the Valley who says that it can cost up to $200 to have your dog, if it's a large enough dog, cremated.
And get the ashes back.
You can get the ashes back, right. We're talking to Kevin was surprised. So she told us 70% of people who at least are in their clinic make that decision to get the ashes back.
And Kevin, I would have bet 10%.
Yeah.
Like, I was way off on that one.
So we're taking calls at 1-800-520-1067 on what your pet ash policy is, especially if you're doing something different. Got a couple of responses at Kevin and Bean on Twitter. Nicole writes in, I have the ashes of my duck on my mantle.
All right. Why not?
And I mean, I guess
it's the same as a pet.
A pet is a pet, right? Bat Killer writes in, we cremated my wife's horse. It cost $1,600. It now lives on the coffee table.
Oh, my God.
Wow, can you imagine what the ashes, how many ashes there must be like for a horse? And finally, talking about how much it costs to get your dog back, comedian Rob Delaney tweets at Kevin and Bean, I'll cremate a dog for $15. So, as usual, Rob gets the best, last, and funniest word. All right, we have time for just a couple of calls here. Kevin, who do you like?
Boy, I don't even know where to start.
Let's start with Dawn. Let's start with Dawn, who has more than just ashes from a pet.
Oh, not stuff. Dawn?
Yes.
Dawn.
Yes.
What are you doing?
What have you done?
Well, nothing. It's like a Native American thing.
What do you have? You have your cat's ashes and what else?
I have his skull.
You have your cat's skull is what it sounded like you said on the phone. What did you really say?
I said skull.
Okay.
I actually had his whole head in the freezer for about 3 years.
Oh, my God.
Wow. Thanks for bringing Lisa and Bean to my side. Who knew one person could do that?
All right, Jeffrey Dahmer. What's going on? Is going on with you? Wait, so your cat died. I guess I should start by asking, did your cat die of natural causes at least?
Yeah, I had pancreatic carcinoma.
All right, so you did not kill your cat, because that sounds like you're the kind of person who... Okay, and then what did you do? Chop off his head and put it in the freezer?
Well, they did. They asked me what I wanted from him, and I said, what? And they said, well, people get parts of their animals, and I said, oh.
Get parts?
Can I have his head?
That's not a thing.
Yeah, and you said, no, can I have his head? That was how the thought process went.
Yes, well, they blinked at me at first, and I said, well, you know...
How do they give you his head? I mean, without getting too graphic here, I mean, they chop his head off. I mean, how does it not, like, leak and whatnot?
Oh, no, they froze him and then chopped off the head and then wrapped it up and kept it in ice and all that. It was really neat.
You're awesome. You said this is a Native American thing?
Yes, they used to actually extract the bones and display them for spiritual reasons.
But are you Native American?
There's a little bit in me.
So
no.
I watch the Redskins. So Dawn. So Dawn, sweetheart, darling. So your cat's head's in the freezer, and then how did it end up becoming a skull? Was there a power outage or something, and one day you just had no choice but you had to unthaw him?
No, I had to wait until I could emotionally handle actually extracting the skull from the
You
the
did
flesh.
That yourself?
You did it yourself.
I did. Yeah.
So you, in other words, you cut off the skin and everything that was left of your cat's head and just kept the skull.
No, there's a process that you do, so it's really simple. You know, you boil it.
This is unbelievable.
Are you serious?
It sounds horrible. It does. When I speak about it, it sounds horrible. But
yeah, of course it sounds horrible. You have your dead cat skull in your house.
At some point, someone called you on the phone. You said, I can't talk now. Boiling my cat's head on the stove.
Yeah, I had to wait for my daughter and my husband to leave the house.
You had a husband? You had a daughter? You're a mom?
Yes, I'm a mom.
Dawn!
I collect other bones, too, but that's my prize.
Your husband is afraid to die now. You know that.
He should be.
God,
he's afraid to come home every night, too.
Oh, my God.
We have plans, but they're not legal, so I can't do anything about it.
Okay, and on that note, ladies and gentlemen, there's Kevin and me, Lister Dawn, adding so much to our day.
Oh, you're the only one.
You're the only one.
We
have a lot of other calls where they sprinkled their ashes, they saved their ashes, they have an urn, they put it up on the shelf, but no one keeps the skull. Zero people. I'm sorry, one.
Okay.
You're crazy, Dawn. We love you. Thanks for calling.
Look, I know very little about anything, but I don't understand why it's so hard to find a giant ocean liner. I know the ocean is a huge place, but doesn't it seem like you could fly over it? If you had an ocean liner that's out there that's just waiting to be plucked for $1 million in scrap metal, don't you think somebody would be able to find it?
And it's been missing since a year ago, January, so over
yes.
a year.
Yes!
That's crazy.
Yes. They don't think it's – I should refresh. We were talking last week about this. Ralph brought this story into us. Interesting Freudian slip there, because the reason the story is making headlines is because it is believed that there are who knows how many rats on this ship that are essentially on a ship that is completely empty, that has no human beings on it. They may be cannibals. They may be the only thing that they have to eat is each other. They may wake up every single day and it's the movie Gladiator on board their ship as they look for something to eat. So the ship has just been out there in the ocean for a year plus. And nobody can find it. Now, they don't think it has sunk because apparently there are GPS devices in the lifeboats, and they have not been activated. They will go off when they go underwater.
Oh, I see. All right.
They have not been activated. So they believe the thing is above water. But this is what I don't understand. Why can't they just fly over the ocean and find it?
I think the ocean's a little bigger than that.
Really?
Yes.
But still.
I think with the satellites for $1 million, which is how much it would be worth to somebody to sell this for scrap metal, don't you think somebody would be trying harder to find it? Especially since it's heading toward Europe and it's full of rabid rats.
Heading for England or Scotland, they're not sure where, and how do they know where it's heading?
They can't find it.
It is just a crazy story, but I had nightmares. At least I know you were also deeply troubled by the way that Ralph was describing it on the air last week about about these rats waking up and having to fight to the death to try to get something to eat, because there's no food, certainly no food on this boat anymore.
It's horrific.
It is a horrific. It sounds like a nightmare, and it sounds like a movie that's waiting to be made. And we joked about last week that they were going to make a movie, and apparently Hollywood was listening, because Rat Boat is, according to this trailer, coming to the Sci-Fi Channel.
Cannibal rats. An ocean liner filled with rats.
It was being towed to the Caribbean last year when it came loose during a storm. It's now feared to be infested with cannibal rats on board, who, lacking a food source, have turned on each other, each other, each other, each other.
Coming this summer on Sci-Fi, it's time for you to come aboard, because death is waiting for you on the Rat Boat. Al Pacino is the captain.
Ooh-ah. There's a lot of rats here. And they're all cannibals. Ooh-ah.
Arnold Schwarzenegger is the exterminator.
Yeah, I'm gonna kill all the rats. How will I do it? With rat poison. Yeah, we'll put poison in the cheese. Ooh-ah. The what? The cheese. The cheese. Ah, you talk funny.
And Christopher Walken as the head of the CDC.
These rats, they're diseased. They're biting people. Make them sick. I don't like it.
When a ghost ship full of cannibalistic diseased rats hits England, the dead will be the lucky ones. When the Rat Boat comes into port, featuring the hit single, the theme from the Rat Boat.
Are gnawing on you. They bring death and diseases too. And rats, they are covered with plague. They will bite and chew off your leg.
Ralph Garman's got a movie coming out called A Million Ways to Die in the West, which looks hilarious. Give you a chance to win some tickets to that before the thing even opens later on this morning. Also, Tim mentioned tickets on the show today and tickets in the third row for the sold-out K-Rock Weenie Roast 2014, which is a week from Saturday. All that coming up this morning here on K-Rock.
Merriam-Webster, as happens about every year, has revealed 150 new words that will be added to its college dictionary.
That's too many.
150 new words.
Well, the language grows all the time, you guys. I mean, you want it to be as accurate and as timely as possible. It won't surprise you guys. I'm always very excited when the new dictionary comes out. Well, I love seeing the stuff that, I mean, it's amazing.
I'm curious. I'm not really excited.
But looking at this
think.
List, let me,
all right.
For instance, auto-tune. Isn't auto-tune something that you've been hearing, yeah, a phrase that you've been hearing for years?
It's part of the language, but how excited can you be to see that in a book?
It's finally in the dictionary. Baby
right.
bump, finally in the dictionary. All
right.
sorts of things having to do with computers are in the dictionary, like hashtag, for instance, is now a word that means something.
Selfie. Stuff that everybody's been using for a long time.
Hotspot. I mean, there's all sorts of exciting new words. And I'm always so surprised to see some of the stuff that makes it. Like spoiler alert is in the dictionary now. I don't know. I just think that's neat. But we wanted to find out more about this because Merriam-Webster, of course, the first name in dictionaries. Everybody knows that.
Sure.
So we asked producer Dave, who can we talk to about the process of getting new words into the language and what's new in 2014? And Ryan McNeil joins us. He is the assistant editor of Merriam-Webster. He's on the Kevin Bean Show right now on K-Rock. Hello, sir. Welcome to the program.
Good morning. How are you guys?
Well, Bean, for one, is very excited.
He's right. It's very exciting when new words go into the dictionary, don't you know? In fact, I think he said it best when he said, it's neat.
He did say it's neat. It's neat in the dictionary. I hope so.
But no, we took that out in 1957.
Oh, it's too bad.
So no one really uses that anymore, don't you know?
What is the process, Mr. McNeil, in how a word gets selected? Is it a vote? Do you have a bunch of people that sit around a table and just argue and no one leaves until you decide? Or what happens?
There is a group of us here at MW, I guess I should say.
Sure.
Where we get together and everyone says, well, this word's being used a lot. Maybe we should consider this. And we take the common vernacular of the day and we make a long list. And not everything gets in, of course.
Right.
But we do look at words that are being used with frequency in the American language and say, yes, that's going to be around for a while. That deserves to go in.
Guys, turducken is now in the dictionary.
Sure, because that's a thing.
That is a thing. Is,
yeah. Now that's a turkey that's stuffed inside of a duck that's also then stuffed inside of a chicken?
Actually, it's a chicken that's stuffed into a duck that's stuffed into a turkey.
Okay. See, if I had the dictionary in front of me, I would know. See, this is a perfect example of why words need to be in the dictionary so you can look them up and know exactly what the hell you're talking about.
And that's been being used since 1982. We tracked it back that far.
Wow, now that's a surprise to me.
It takes a while sometimes for these words to really, you know, make sure that they're going to stick around. We don't want to put just anything in the dictionary.
I see. What else is new in the 2014 Merriam-Webster Dictionary that our listeners would be interested in, sir?
Catfish, for example.
Sure.
The person who sets up a false personal profile on a social networking site.
Sure.
You heard that, of course, from the movie and the TV show.
Yeah,
that's in.
That makes sense.
Absolutely, yeah.
Baby bump.
Yeah.
Okay, right.
Okay. When a woman's showing a pregnancy, baby bump now will be an official term used in the dictionary.
All okay. right.
Should be. I like it.
Paywall.
Paywall. Mm. All right. That makes mm-hmm. sense, yeah.
The system that prevents Internet users from accessing certain web content without paying for it.
Right. Those are called newspapers that no one reads anymore, the ones that charge, right?
Right, of course, yes. Hashtag, as you mentioned, fracking.
Fracking is one of them.
Fracking.
All right.
Injecting fluid into shale beds in order to free up petroleum resources.
All right.
That's been
so the
used
news
since
a lot.
1953, by the way.
Well, why are you guys so slow?
Fangirl.
Fangirl.
A girl, a woman who's extremely or overly enthusiastic.
Right.
First used in 1934. Hmm.
What? What's your rush?
Well, we weren't sure that was going to stick around.
Okay.
But apparently it has, so it's in.
All right.
But so 150 words, as you mentioned.
Yeah, that's a lot.
Very, very complex process we go through. And some of them, of course, you may have heard. Some of you may not have heard. They're being used, we think, in enough frequency that eventually they will become commonplace. So we're ahead of the curve.
Ahead of the curve.
All right. Okay.
Like what?
For example, Cyrus.
Cyrus.
Cyrus is a sexually transmitted virus that can only be caught from twerking.
Okay, all right.
Like, oh
I'm not
familiar
I
with
got
that.
The human Poplonosaurus.
Oh, wow.
A frozen.
Right.
Stop it.
A frozen is the temperature where it's so cold that an African American's hair will freeze.
I've never heard that one.
Afrozen. Oh,
okay.
My God, it's so cold out. Look at that guy. He's afrozen.
Okay. All right.
A Kardash.
Yeah.
That's the act of running away from horrible reality TV stars.
Yeah.
I tried to turn on E, but I ended up just Kardashing away.
Right. I like it.
A beaver.
A beaver?
Mm-hmm. Yes. That's when you have to go to the bathroom. You say, I had to take a giant beaver. Or, oh, my God, look at the size of that beaver. See, feces.
Right. All right. I think we understand.
It's also poo-poo.
Right. Got it. Got
Instead
it.
Instead of saying poo-poo, you'll say beaver.
Beaver. Right. No, we understand. Yes.
I'm saying beaver is equal to poo-poo.
Right. We got you. And we're with you.
And a new word, of course, that combines plus and first, plurse. Plurse is now in the dictionary.
I'm sorry. I don't recognize that word.
Oh, everybody's using it now.
Plurse.
It's a first, but also in addition to, you say plurse.
Now, Kevin started that, right?
I don't know if he started it, but everyone's using it. I heard it just this morning on the radio.
And now, it's time for A Moment with Kevin.
Plus, world's worst first dates. What's happening? What do you think's happening?
That was A Moment with Kevin.
Ryan, don't you think it might be a little... Come on. Don't you think it might be a little too early to add that to the dictionary?
Not at all.
All right. Good to hear it. Thank you, sir.
All right. We'll let Mr. McNeil go.
Thank you.
All right.
We have to open up the phone lines right now at 1-800-520-1067. You could be the first caller if you want, or you can call right after that. We're looking for contestants. You want to play to win tickets for this year's sold-out K-Rock Weenie Rose 2014. It's a week from Saturday. Call now. We'll put you on the air next year on K-Rock. Welcome to the world-famous K-Rock, home of the K-Rock Road Trip USA 2014. Stop number 2, the Life is Beautiful Festival in Las Vegas, the one in Nevada, don't you know? That's the Foo Fighters and the Arctic Monkeys and Fitz and the Tantrums, Kanye West, Broken Bills, Outkast, Neon Trees. Great, great lineup. We got a chance for you to qualify at 9:10 this morning here on the Kevin and Bean Show, and then again throughout the day at 12:10, 3:10, and 6:10. You can get details and also qualify at krock.com. All right, Lisa, let's talk the Duggars.
Okay.
I don't know much about them. Jim Bob and Michelle Duggar have or have had a reality show on TLC called 19 Kids and Counting. I don't watch the show. I don't know anything about the family, except from time to time I think they pop up on the Today Show, like when they've had a new kid. Well, they're back in the news this time because one of their kids, their fourth child, Jill, who is now 23 years old, recently got married to a young man named Derek. And it was a very strange courtship, and they saved their first kiss for their wedding day. So Ralph was telling us about this, and we had so many questions. We thought, who can we talk to that knows something about the Duggar family? And one of our very kind K-Rock listeners, Joanna, reached out to us and said, I am a Duggar authority. I know everything about this family. I can fill you guys in. Joanna, welcome to the Kevin and Bean Show, my dear. How are you?
Good. Hi, Bean. Hi, Lisa.
Hello.
And Ralph is here as well.
Oh, yay. Hi, Ralph.
Hi, Joanna. Hey, can I ask you a question?
Sure.
Why are you a Duggar expert?
Well, much like most of America, I have been watching them on where else but TLC, the Free Show Network.
Free Show Network, right.
I've just kind of fallen in love with the family. I think they're super cute and kind of funky, and it's always just kind of fun to watch someone who's way different. And if you guys know anything about them, you know that they're a little out there. But before we get started, can I preface by saying that I don't own any cats.
Because you know what Ralph was thinking.
Okay. I'm not 500 pounds, and I am married to an actual human man.
Wow.
Wow, she just cut our legs off at the knee with everything we're going to say.
You do not fit the profile, that's for sure.
So is this TLC 19 Kids and Counting show still on, Joanna?
What's not the final season, but they just wrapped up a season with the season finale being Jill getting engaged with Derek, but...
Okay.
There's no doubt that it's going to go on for quite some time.
It sounds like it. Now, I just remember when these people first started making news a few years ago, when they had like their 50th or something kid, everybody got really concerned and wanted to send child services in. But then as people investigated, it seems like all of their kids are well-adjusted and well-behaved and smart, and the family seems happy, and it's almost like they're saying to the world, what do you got? Come at me now. We're doing things right here, and everybody's taken care of. Is that still the case?
Yeah, definitely. You know, you think of people like John K. Plus 8 who were on this reality show, and then they had all this drama come up. The Duggars have had none of that. They're just kind of, they do their own thing, and they don't let the outside world kind of taint their beliefs, and they're still wholesome, and they wear long skirts, and they don't dance, but they're still, you know, pulling in, I'm sure, millions of views.
Yeah.
Do you have a child caught in a bear trap there?
Oh, no, that's my dog, Olive, who's chewing on a squirrel.
Oh, okay. Like a monkey.
All right. All right, let's talk about Jill. She's 23 years old, obviously a virgin. Had she ever dated anyone even before she started courting with Derek?
Well, they don't date. They court, which they call dating with a purpose. And this is the first guy we've ever seen her really talking to. They make reference to different guys calling Jim Bob and asking to be the girl, but this is the first guy she's ever really even talked to.
Bob's the dad, right?
Jim Bob's the dad, yeah.
Okay. And how did they meet? Are the girls in a bubble so that guys can't get to them?
Well, it's funny because I was reading part of their book, Don't Judge.
Yeah. Is that the title of the book?
Don't Judge.
It should be.
And, you know, they say that whenever a guy approaches them, they say, go talk to my dad. He knows what I like. So,
oh, yuck.
Yeah, it's a little weird sometimes. But,
yeah, daddy knows what I like.
Derek and Jim Bob were prayer partners over the internet because Derek was in Nepal doing humanitarian work. And in true pimp style, Jim Bob thought, I think he would like Jill and Jill would like him. So they kind of were introduced through Jim Bob over Skype. Supervised Skype sessions, of course.
And Jim Bob thought, this is great because with 8,000 miles between them, there's no way his penis is that long.
There's no way the genitals can come anywhere near each other
right. With
that distance.
So this is so fascinating to me. So the girls never pick their own guys, and I assume it works in reverse also with the guys. Are they allowed to pick their own girls, or do they have to go through somebody too?
Well, they've only had one other kids get married, and that was Josh, the oldest, and he kind of met this girl named Anna at a homeschool conference, and he kind of pursued her. The man in this family always has the upper hand.
I gotcha.
Yeah.
I gotcha. All right. So they're basically, are they Skype dating? And it's all supervised every time the kids talk to each other over the internet, right? There's always an adult nearby.
Anytime it's communication via Skype or text, there's always someone chaperoning.
Wow.
So on the show, they'll show Derek and Jill Skyping and mom and dad are on the couch. And they talk a lot about scripture and they read the Bible together and text messages. There's always someone else in the group texting, which makes me think how it's easy to like text them on the fly and then delete it, you know.
Right. Here's what I don't get. And look, I'm not knocking this family because it seems to be working for them. They all seem real happy. But I mean, if you're only going to have conversations about the scripture in front of your parents with a person before you marry them, it seems like there's a lot of ground that's not being covered that might indicate whether you two are going to be compatible or not, I would think.
I agree. No sexy time. That's just going to – all of their hormones are raging, and they're just going to want to get married faster so they can bone down.
Right. So how long did they Skype and court before the engagement?
They started talking in March of 2013, and they were engaged in March 2014, so an entire year.
Wow. And I understand they didn't even hold hands before they got engaged.
Right. All they were allowed to do was a side hug.
What's a side hug?
So that's where you kind of like go up to someone and put your arm around their shoulders. Your front cannot touch under any circumstances.
Right, because a penis can burst through clothing.
Yes. And it's funny because when he came home from Nepal, she had waited 3 months because she hadn't seen him in Nepal. And he ran from, you know, he was running in the airport to go see her and they accidentally front hugged.
Oh!
Yeah.
Blasphemy.
Scandal.
Yeah.
Unclean.
The mom got all tight-lipped, and she said, oh, I'm sure they're not going to let that happen again.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
Oh, my God.
All right. So you got to see the wedding that was on the 19 Kids and Counting TV show?
No, they haven't aired that yet. That was this Saturday, and the season ended about a week or two ago.
Oh,
so next season, it's going to be wedding mode.
Yeah.
I wonder what that first kiss is like. Like, it's not awkward enough that it's literally the first kiss of your life, but you're doing it in front of all these people and all these TV cameras
well,
and your
parents.
Well, think
of the wedding night. Every single thing you do is a first.
Jesus. Yeah, yeah.
They had to kiss through cellophane wrap, I understand. They put saran wrap between their faces when they kissed.
You know, when the son Josh got married, they did air that. That was a few years ago, and that kiss was awkward. He pretty much wanted to eat her face off.
Yeah. Oh, God.
Yeah. It's fascinating. I'm so happy that you reached out to us, Joanna. I mean, it's so interesting to me that somebody who likes this show would also like watching the Duggars.
I know. I'm a twisted person sometimes. It's just, I find humor in everything, and It's fun just to see how kind of uptight they are. But then there's one named Ginger. Oh, they're all their names start with a J. All of the kids' names start with a J.
That's adorable.
Sure.
Yeah. So Ginger, she seems super sassy. So I'm just waiting for her to go rogue and start, like, I don't know, dating some porn star or...
Yeah, they're going to find a teddy love bear in her room.
Yeah, exactly.
Someone's got to go off the rails, right?
Right.
I'm hoping.
They can't all stay between the lines, no. That's for sure. All right, TLC's 19 Kids and Counting is the name of the show. I guess we'll see that awkward kiss when the show returns in the fall. But, Joanna, you are awesome. We really appreciate you reaching out, and we really appreciate you sharing your Duggar knowledge with us. Thank you so much.
Thanks. I love you guys.
Bye-bye. You have to be so happy, Kevin. Your favorite politician is going back to work at the end of this month.
Oh, I love Rob Ford so much.
Mayor of Toronto, he's this guy.
Do you smoke crack cocaine?
Exactly. Yes, I have smoked crack cocaine. Do I? Am I an addict? No.
Have I tried it?
Probably in one of my drunken stupors, probably approximately about a year ago.
That's the best politician in the world who says, yeah, I smoked crack cocaine, but probably because I was blackout drunk.
Yeah, they didn't even ask him about drinking.
No, well, everyone drinks.
He brought that up.
This guy has been in and out of rehab. You see him partying. He's always out there like dancing and sweating and swearing and getting in fights. And he's just the best. But he's been in rehab and he is coming back to work at the end of the month. And then he's up for re-election in the fall,
I guess, in
November.
He's sort of a quitter to me. I'm sure he can follow through with what he needs to do.
Ralph gave us a story earlier this week that is fantastic. I don't see a lot of live theater, but I think I would like to see Rob Ford the Musical. Apparently, it is a thing that is happening. They're going to be putting it on in September, and they are currently in the process of auditioning candidates to play Rob Ford in the play. Can you imagine how awesome that could be?
Oh, that would be so good.
I'm very excited to find out more about it. So we asked Dave, hey, could you line somebody up from Toronto? And I believe we have the man who is writing the show, and he is Brett McCraig. And he joins us on the Kevin DeBeach Show on K-Rock right now. Mr. McCraig, thanks so much for the time, sir.
How's it going, eh?
It's going well.
It's going great. So the Rob Ford the Musical is happening.
Yeah, we're going to be up on stage for 2 weeks in September. And mm-hmm. It'll be just before the election, eh? So, you know. I think the timing's pretty good.
Now, is this a pro-Rob Ford thing or an anti-Rob? I mean, he's trying to sway the election one way or the other?
No, it's not about, you know, it's not political, eh? We're just put, you know, Rob Ford is a larger-than-life character. And, you know, it's about his, you know, adventures and his antics. And
right.
We're just putting it up there, you know, in an entertaining fashion. At least we hope so.
Right. And you had quite a turnout from, you know, fat, balding guys who want to play the mayor.
Yeah, we had open auditions, for the lead character of Rob.
Right.
And we had, you know, about 300 guys showed up.
Wow.
Auditioned from all over Canada. So, you know, we had guys who are professional actors all the way to people who just thought they looked like him to people who just wanted to be part of this because, you know, he's a pretty polarizing character in the Canadian politics.
Sure.
And also a lot of people think, you know, oh, here's my chance to, you know, my big break. So we think people are going to like it, and we think it's going to be, you know, well attended.
Now, you wrote some of the songs in this too, right?
Yeah, I wrote the book and all the songs as well.
Okay.
And we're doing it, you know, through Second City here in Toronto. And so we go up for 2 weeks in September, which, of course, is just before the election. But like I said, we're not like bashing him or anything. Or,
right.
But we're not pro-Ford either. It's just this absurd character in, you know, Canadian culture. We thought it would just be perfect for a musical, a big, you know, bombastic musical. Eh?
Yeah. What kind of songs are you doing? Are they parody songs of well-known pop hits, or are you writing all original music, or what's going on?
It's mostly parody songs, but you know, there are some original things in there as well. And, you know, now that we've finally found our Rob Ford, I think everyone is going to be really impressed by this guy. He can sing, he can act, and we're really looking forward to, you know, everyone coming out to see it.
Oh, so you already cast him. Good.
Yeah, a guy named Gordon Thompson is our Rob Ford. We finally found him, and we're already hard at work, and we're laying down the soundtrack as well. We're making an album out of it.
Oh, wow.
Okay. We just finished the... Just finished the commercial, because we're already we're starting ticket sales already, because we think we're going to sell out. So we're already got a commercial running, and I think people start buying it.
That's very exciting. Yeah. I'd love to hear that.
Well, I sent your producer, the guy there, who doesn't speak English very well, by the way. I don't know if you know that or not.
The King of Mexico?
Yeah, it's hard to understand his accent, eh?
Yeah, uh-huh.
It's like, what's that all about?
You know what else? He can't speak Spanish either, which is strange.
So I sent him a commercial, and I said, you know, maybe, you know, it's a long way to go from Los Angeles to Toronto, but I thought maybe people might want to buy tickets when they hear a little bit of the musical, eh?
Yeah. Absolutely.
Oh, we'd love to hear it. Thank you very much for sending it. Yeah, let's hear some of Rob Ford the musical then.
Coming this fall, it's a brand new musical, eh? At the Toronto Civic Light Opera, about our famous mayor, Rob Ford, eh? It's Rob Ford the musical, eh? When he started out, he was just drunk and fat, right?
I am drunk and fat, whoa. A tub of goo. I am drunk and fat, whoa. Big fat tub of goo.
And then we thought things couldn't get worse, eh? Boy, were we wrong. That's when he found crack.
A little pipe full of crack in my hand. When I get real drunk, I want to smoke all that I can.
And so after embarrassing us, like, internationally, Rob Ford says he still wants to run for mayor, eh?
Toronto, Toronto. I want to be your mayor some more. Toronto, Toronto. This election's on. It's only Canada anyway.
Is this guy unbelievable or what, eh? Coming this fall to the Toronto Civic Light Opera. It's Rob Ford the musical, eh? Get your tickets now, eh?
I would love to.
That sounds so good.
I'll set you guys aside some tickets, eh? You come out and check it out the show.
That would be great. Deal. Thank you, Brett.
Our friend Michael Schneider, LA Bureau Chief of TV Guide Magazine, will be here in about 20 minutes. Got an update from him on some of the new TV shows that are coming out and who will be the new voice of late night TV. Who's going to take over for Craig Ferguson? We'll find out from Michael coming up in just a few minutes. Also, we got Ryan Getzlaff from the Anaheim Ducks on the program today. And we're going to give you some tickets to go see Ducks versus Kings in round two of the Stanley Cup. It's all on the way from K-Rock.
Speaking of athletes, it does seem like if you're a professional athlete and you hurt yourself in a really lame way, you make up a good story. You lie. You have to lie, right?
Who's your buddy who got hurt making pancakes?
Dustin Penner.
Dustin Penner.
Yeah.
And that was he got mocked for forever after that, as well he should have been, right?
And then traded.
Yeah, he did.
Are you suggesting that one led to the other?
I don't think everybody shares my disapproval of him. But Matt Cain, we can all agree on, from the San Francisco Giants, is a dumbass.
What right? happened to Matt?
He was making a sandwich before the game at the team kitchen at AT&T Park.
Okay.
Just before warm-ups, he was making a sandwich. He drops the knife and tries to reach down and grab it before it hits the floor.
Why?
Which he is successful doing.
Okay.
But cuts his right finger, index finger, so he can't pitch that night.
Yeah!
He was scheduled to pitch, and instead, he grabbed the knife before it hit the floor and cut his finger.
Unbelievable. You would think that if you're a Major League Baseball pitcher, just like if you're a professional musician, that you would really be conscious of treating your hands like precious weapons.
I would think so. That's how you make your living, your hand and your arm.
That's right.
But no, cut it. Was unable to play that night.
And that's way to screw up the rotation, by the way. when it comes to the starting five. You know, you just throw everything out of whack if all of a sudden at the last minute game day you decide, hey, I can't pitch or whatever.
Hey,
so,
you got attacked by a bear. A bear came into the locker room and you wrestled into the ground and gotten slightly injured.
You can't say I was making a sandwich. You can't anyone that story.
Well, I don't know if he's clumsy or it was just one of those things or whatever. By the way, he is the second member of the San Francisco Giants who got hurt grabbing a knife out of midair in the last couple of years.
What's
so you think
happening?
You think he would have learned from the other guy. But we asked producer Dave, is there any way in a million years we can talk to Matt Cain? Even though he is a dreaded San Francisco Giant, we welcome him to the Kevin and Bean Show right now. Hey, Matt.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
We're good. You didn't see this one coming, did you? That had to be a bad surprise for you.
Yeah, one second you're making the sandwich, and then the next time, you're out of the rotation. So
yeah,
not ideal. No.
Did you tell your manager the true story?
Yeah, I told him what happened, and it wasn't even a bad cut, but it was in a bad place on the hand. So every time I tried to throw during warmups, it just kept opening up and bleeding. So
right,
yeah, it makes sense. I mean, it makes sense. You can't pitch with a cut finger or there. But what was going through your mind? Like, was it just a reflex action? You saw the knife fall. You just had to go for it without even thinking about it.
That's exactly it. I was just making the sandwich, and the thing slid up the counter, and I went to grab it, and I did catch it, but I caught it blade first.
Yeah,
kind of. Took a little nick out of my hand, and nobody feels like a bigger idiot than I do.
I hate to point out the obvious, but it's okay if a knife hits the floor.
Yeah, I know. It was just, okay. It wasn't a conscious decision.
I see.
You know?
Okay.
I just went for it, and I guess my reflexes were too good for my own good.
Are you you taking a lot of heat from your fellow team members?
Hold on a second, guys. A little warm in here. Let me open a window here. I'm here.
Oh, jeez.
Ow. Oh.
What just happened?
Matt.
Oh. God okay. Damn it.
What happened?
The window closed on my hand. Ow!
You said you were opening the window.
I did, and it slammed shut.
Oh, no.
That's unfortunate.
Jesus. Ow. Why is that window so slippery? Ow.
Yeah, probably the window's fault, all right?
I got to sit down on this couch.
You all right?
Ow! Ow! A spring came out of the couch. There's a spring in my ass.
That can't be good.
Ow.
You're having a bad morning, man.
How many holes are you supposed to have in there?
Oh.
Ow. All right. I'm going to make some toast. I'm hungry.
Maybe you should be careful.
Oh, no.
It was a short in the toaster. I'm electrocuted.
I'm
just going to have to play some accordion.
Why would you?
Ow! I broke my wrist playing the accordion.
How do you break your wrist playing the accordion?
I pressed the accordion too hard.
Why are you playing the accordion?
Ow! It makes me relax. I got to spray a little cologne on myself to freshen up a little bit. Ah, it's in my eyes! Cologne's in my eyes! I can't see!
Poor guy!
Where's my dog? Come here!
Oh, no!
Get off the dog! I have to write an email to the team saying I can't make it to the game.
All right.
Oh, my fingers broke on the keyboard.
What?
My fingers broke on the keyboard.
Typing an email?
All the fingers just snapped in half. Ow. Oh, I have to write a letter with this pencil. Oh, it's in my eye. The pencil's in my eye.
How did the pencil get in your eye?
Oh, no, the pencil's swam in my eye. Ow. Ow.
Oh, Matt, you just have to lay down. Today's a wash for you, sir. Okay, I'm sorry. I'm sorry we called. It's getting real now, man. You must feel like a short timer looking at the clock and realizing
I am looking at the clock, but only because I'm excited to go.
You're almost out of K-Rock, dude. This has been a significant part of your life working here on the Kevin.
But not because I'm excited about not coming back. This is a fantastic job.
I think the chances...
I'm here for the lifetime, Bean.
I agree with you. You're here for the lifetime, which is probably your final show because you're likely to come back from Brazil, if at all, in a body bag. So here's what we're going to be doing. This half hour, we're going to be doing our tribute to Kevin as we say goodbye to him as he leaves not only the show but the earth. In the next segment, we want to take your calls. If you have any special memories of Kevin, we want to hear from you at 1-800-520-106. If you want to call up and share something that you'll never stop laughing about that you heard Kevin do or saw him do, we want to take your calls. First, though, we thought this might be a great time to count down the top 10 moments with Kevin of all time.
Hmm. What a crazy raging debate there has been on which ones are the worst.
It's tough.
Well, how do you narrow down a file of 1,000 just to 10?
Yeah.
Now, Kevin, for folks who maybe haven't listened much, describe what a moment with is.
Well, basically, I know in my head what I want to say, but what comes out of my mouth is very, 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 very different. And sometimes the grammar is completely mixed up. Sometimes the words are mixed up. There are a lot of times when I don't have any idea what I'm saying. And so we put them in the form of a moment with. It's got a little intro, a little outro. And if I could just say, there's probably 1,000 of those of me. There's probably 75 for Bean, and 20 for Lisa.
Yeah, that's about right.
And that's just not cool.
Well, every year at the end of the calendar year, we count down the top 10 moments of the year, and Kevin usually has about 8 of them. But this is the first time we've ever looked at all time, because it's his last show, so we thought, why not? So let's get it started with the top 10 Kevin's moments with of all time, and we'll start with number 10.
And now, it's time for A Moment with Kevin.
By the way, just for the movie theaters, there's not one size that fits all.
Yeah.
That was a moment.
That was so good.
Now, by the way, Bean made a rule, and I think it's a correct rule, that Lisa is not allowed to help me.
So I stopped.
Right.
After everyone yelled at me.
When I'm stumbling, everybody just sits back with a grin on their face and just goes, die, sucker.
Just enjoy it. Don't try to – look, watch the nice man drown. Don't jump in and try to save him. All right, number 9, we're going back a few years, and this is a bizarre one, Kevin, because this isn't you having trouble coming up with a word.
Nope.
This is you knowing a word, it's just the wrong one.
I sometimes think too far ahead, Bean. That's my issue.
Uh-huh.
And now, it's time for A Moment with Kevin.
We've got to get to the bottom of what in the hell is going on with this Blue Man group. These guys, they paint their faces red.
That was A Moment with
now,
Kevin.
Now, how? Why? Who?
The color red was 3 seconds from the color blue in that sentence. So I don't know.
Number 8 in the best moments with Kevin of all time, and I believe this one is just from earlier this year, 2014, and we had a raging debate on this one, trying to figure out what it was he was trying to say when this came out.
And now, it's time for A Moment with Kevin.
I'll probably have his picture there with a sudden little...
That was A Moment with Kevin.
Yes. And by the way, if you guys think asking me what I was saying helps, it doesn't. No. So basically everybody just has to try and figure it out.
Number 7, we go back a few years now, and if I recall correctly, we were interviewing that crazy family down in Arkansas, wherever they live. What are they, the Duggins, I think? They have like 22 kids.
Duggars.
The Duggars. And they still keep having more kids. Well, I think they only had about 20 at the time when Kevin asked this insightful question.
And now, it's time for A Moment with Kevin.
Now, which sex is your oldest?
We have a boy, Joshua, that's 16.
Now, he's not going to want to spend much time with all those other boys in their room come pretty here a couple years.
That was A Moment with Kevin.
What do you think it is in me that feels like I need to finish? Like, I've already destroyed the sentence. Why do I keep going?
I would like to see that question diagram, too, if we have any English majors out there.
Impossible.
Like to figure out how those words fit together. Number 6, one of our favorite memories. Look, Kevin loves this guy. We've had him as a guest a dozen times, but somehow he just couldn't get his name right.
And now, it's time for A Moment with Kevin.
For those of you who didn't see, Rob Durden is part of Robin Big. And we'll talk more about that and more with Rob Durden. Again, Rob is getting 41. Rob Durden is in the studio. He is half of Robin Big.
That was A Moment with Kevin.
Yeah, we called him later. Rob Dyrdek, of course, we called him later. And he said he just found it funny. He didn't want to correct me because he thought it was funny.
Number 5, I still don't know what the hell's going on here.
And now, it's time for A Moment with Kevin.
lick her bare neck than I would her boobs with a sweater over them.
I don't know, so that's a toss-up.
That was A Moment with Kevin.
Any thoughts as to what could be happening
I'm
there?
I'm just looking at the clock. We're pretty late. We should probably move on.
Now, number four is interesting because I think Kevin got out all the words that he was trying to say properly and in the correct order, but his logic fell apart. Listen up.
And now it's time for A Moment with Kevin.
What's 1207 in military time, my friend?
Say 1709? Huh?
1709?
What? Hold on. Lisa? I don't know. I was thinking 22.
But
that wouldn't be 17 either, would it?
Why would we jump ahead 2 minutes? Why would it become 09 all of a sudden?
I don't know.
That was A Moment with Kevin.
Thoughts?
This sure is fun.
Rashida Jones.
Oh, come
beautiful,
on.
Talented, one of our favorite people, favorite actresses. We love her so much. Of course, she was one of the stars of The Office, and Kevin asked her this question about that role.
And now, it's time for A Moment with Kevin.
Did you know that going into when you started on the second Office, when you were on the outside Office, not the main one?
That was A Moment with Kevin.
At least you could tell where I was going with that one, even though I didn't get there.
We had Captain Dustin Brown from the Los Angeles Kings on the air with us yesterday. And Kevin's a huge Kings fan. He could talk to him all day. But one of the questions that he asked, he did talk to him all day. It was about a 45-second question.
Yeah.
And that was in the tradition of this number two in the all-time moments with Kevin, where he asked a similar long-winded question to the great Travis Pastrana.
And now, it's time for A Moment with Kevin.
That's so crazy. The dirt's so slippery, then you hit the pavement. Sometimes that's more sticky, sometimes it's slipperier. But there are some good accidents happen in this. And not just with cars on cars. You hit posts or something else. And it seems like avoiding that is the biggest key to winning that race.
That was A Moment with Kevin.
All right, I have some insight on that one. About halfway through, my mind is going, shut up, stop talking, shut up. And I ignore it.
Was there a question for Travis at any point in that?
I don't believe so.
Okay. It's time, ladies and gentlemen, Kevin's final show before he dies in Brazil, the number one all-time moment with Kevin.
And now, it's time for A Moment with Kevin.
Is that, so he doesn't, are you a regular duck fan? You watch all the time him?
That was A Moment with Kevin.
How could it not be?
No,
how could it not
be?
All right, let's take one call real quick before the break.
We don't need
Let's go to Maria. She's on line two. She's in El Monte. She's going to get us started here as we invite our listeners to call in and share their favorite Kevin memories at 1-800-520-1067. Hi, Maria.
Strawberry ice cream.
Oh, strawberry ice cream.
Now, what's your memory of that story and how what you heard about it, how it unfolded?
Mine?
Yes.
I have a picture of Kevin in a hotel room waking up to find strawberry ice cream smeared all over the wall.
Yeah, it was actually my home, and I got some strawberry ice cream before I went to sleep. And when I woke up, there was literally strawberry ice cream all over the wall. That's one of those situations where I would give $1 million to have a video of what went on while I was supposedly sleeping.
Was it Ambien, Kevin?
I don't know. May have been. Yeah. Let's say it's Ambien. Because things happen on Ambien.
That was a great one. Thanks so much for the call. All right, we'll take your calls. Your favorite memories of Kevin, 1-800-520-1067, when we return right after this.
That's 6.7.
Come on, buddy. We're all having fun now. Come on. Taking your calls at 1-800-520-1067 as we remember the great Kevin Ryder of the Kevin and Bean Show on his final program. Hey, let's go to Doug to get us going for this segment, please. He's on line 7 calling us from Baldwin Park. We're all reminiscing about our favorite Kevin moments over the years, favorite memories. Hey, Doug, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
I forgot about this one.
I like when Kevin, came back from vacation without his wedding ring in his pants.
Talk about you got a lot of splaining to do, Kevin.
It was my passport, wedding ring, and pants.
Wow.
And I had left them, I think, on the plane. I don't know. I ended up at a consulate. I don't even remember much of it.
It was a good time, though,
wasn't it? Totally forgot about that. But it is embarrassing to go to anyone and say, I left my pants somewhere.
Yeah, exactly. Thank you, Doug. Appreciate the call. Thanks for listening. Let's go to Joey. He's on line five, bringing back one of our all-time favorite moments.
Hey, Joey.
Morning, Chuckleheads and Lisa May.
Hi.
So my favorite moment's St. Patty's Day when he took the wrong car.
Oh, Kevin. Oh,
now, when you say, hold on, when you say took, you mean the valet forced the wrong car on me.
Yeah.
Kevin, you got into someone else's car, remember? And tell the story about what you thought when you got in and started driving it away.
Well, first of all, I had gotten a brand new car the day before. Like, that helps. And then this one was very, very, very close to it. And the guy handed me the key, said, here's your car. So I got in and drove off. And I saw, like, a brush in there and a couple different things. I was like, those sons of bitches were driving my car. And then I realized there was stuff everywhere. It was all for a female, and it was not my car.
It was not even the color of your car.
It was close. I mean, mine was dark, dark blue or something, and this was black. But then I thought, oh, I got to get back right away. And I pulled over, and I was going to pull into the drive, you know, the parking lot, and hopefully no one would see me. But the traffic was so backed up, I had to stop in the middle lane, and I heard somebody yell, that's my car!
That's awesome.
I just got out and walked through traffic.
Thank you for the call, sir. Yeah, let's go to Mike. He's on line seven, Alhambra. Hey, Mike, welcome to the program.
Yeah, I wanted to talk about Kevin's grave that was sweeping the nation. Kevining.
Remember Kevining?
Yes.
Yeah, that was great.
There's a little that he hates more.
Now, Kevin, the story was you were at a photo shoot.
Yes.
The only picture you said don't use was that one, right?
Yeah, because I'm not really that picky. I don't find myself attractive in pictures. So which one you use doesn't really matter.
Right.
But this particular one, I looked, the R word that we're not allowed to say anyway.
You were especially special.
Redskin, right.
Redskin, right. And I said, that's the only one. You can pick any other photo you want. I'm fine. I don't care. And that's the one they used.
That's awesome.
Happened. And then everybody had to do that. To this day, people tried to get me to do it in photos.
And people still send their Kevining photos, too.
Yep.
I mean, it has not died. All right, let's go to Robert in Pasadena. I'm not sure I remember this one exactly the way Robert's telling it.
Oh, I do.
Hi, good morning, guys.
Hi, Robert.
Hi.
So many memories to remember back on, but I'm going to concentrate on the Coachella episode where you were awkwardly passed out, perched on a couch.
Yeah, I was laying half on a couch, half off.
Yes.
And I was passed out, and people were doing weird stuff to me, and they put the photo up. And then the only one I remember the Photoshop was of me in the war room with President Obama when they took out Bin Laden. And I was just sleeping in the corner. K-Rock people all over the place were just putting me in the most unlikely of situations.
That's a great one, Robert. Thank you for the call. Let's go to Chuck. He's on line three. Chatsworth, up next.
Hey, Chuck.
Good morning, everyone.
Hello.
Well, I mean, yes, there are so many of them. And this one just happened recently. Kevin hanging up on Sir Paul McCartney.
Oh.
I mean, who hangs up on Paul McCartney, for God's sake?
Yes.
That's a great question. Hold on. Here it is.
See you, God. See you, God.
Who hangs up on Paul McCartney? Yeah. And by the way, he's never been the same since. I think he's canceled
a lot of shows.
That happened.
You don't think there's any other determining factors?
Nope.
I think that was I think that hurt him deeply. I really do. All right. Line five, Kevin, you're going to love. Minda calls us from West L.A. to remind you of what story, Minda?
Kevin versus the raccoon.
Kevin versus the raccoon.
That's right.
That son of a bitch.
I crack up when I think of Kevin facing off with the raccoon in his driveway every time I'm in my driveway.
The raccoon was right behind my car, so I couldn't get out to go to work.
Mm-hmm.
And I couldn't scare it away. It just stood there. I threw a 2x4 at it. I could barely pick up the 2x4. And it just looked at me like, and? I don't know. It took 45 minutes or something. All right.
Thanks for the call. Great. Christian writes in, I have a couple of favorite Kevin moments. When he got super upset while playing poker and stormed off only to find out a few minutes later that he had won and shamelessly came back to the table.
Oh, that's right.
Another Coachella memory when Kevin borrowed someone else's Honda motor scooter only to wreck it a few seconds later.
Yeah, by the way, that was a classic. It was an older motorcycle that they had rebuilt. Pristine and perfect.
Oh.
That's the one I wrecked.
And you got on it and
8 seconds just, later, was in the dirt.
Just face first.
And also, he adds another favorite Kevin memory, when he threatened to fight everyone at the Miss Double D pageant. Remember that?
No, they deserved it.
All right, let's go to Melanie real quick. She's on
line Really? There's
two.
More?
Melanie is in Orange, and she wants to tell you how you, Kevin, have changed her life for the better. Hi, Melanie.
Well, that's not exactly right, but... I can relate to Kevin. I have multiple sclerosis, and I have a lot of cognitive problems just like Kevin. Every time I hear Kevin make a mistake, I think of myself, and I was suggesting that maybe you get an MRI and find out what's wrong with you.
Could I skip that step and just say I have MS? I mean, do you think people would buy that?
I think they would buy it. Honestly, I really do.
You know what? If that were your new thing, if you took Melanie's suggestion and came in one day and said, "Hey guys, I have MS," we actually wouldn't be able to make fun of you anymore.
Legally, we probably couldn't,
like legally,
right?
Yeah, legally. This could.
But then we'd have to prepare like three times as much show as we do
that
now.
That is true.
Yeah, that's true.
That'd be
rough. All right, Melanie. Thanks so much for the call. We appreciate your memory. By the way, I'm very, very sad that we're going to lose you. It's been a lot of fun.
I'm going to be back.
Sure you are.
Well, I hope so.